The FBI in Peace and War. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story, Scandal Sheet.
Fasten your seatbelts, please. No smoking, miss. Fasten your seatbelt, sir.
Jimmy.
Your seatbelt, sir.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Thank you. No smoking, everyone.
Guess we're coming in now.
Fasten your seatbelt.
Yeah, I guess we are.
And you're excited, huh?
Well.
Go on. I don't try to hide it. Be excited. I know how it was the first time I came here. No one could have told me I wasn't going to own the whole city in 6 months or less.
All right. Well, I was giving it a whole year.
Oh, you like New York, Jimmy. You'll never regret your decision.
What's to regret? The only other offer I had was in Dad's shoe factory. And you know how I've burned that bridge behind me.
Yes, and it's well burned. Young man with your potential mustn't waste himself. You've got a brilliant career ahead of you.
You really think so?
Well, would I say so if I didn't? Would I go out on a limb and recommend you to a big publishing house like Marvin Perkins?
I just can't believe it. I keep thinking I'm going to wake up and find that Mr. H.L. Marvin never existed and I'm still back on the campus.
I know what you mean. I felt the same way when I first read your story.
You did?
Exactly the same way. No college sheet could produce writing like this, I told myself. No lad of 20 could have such command, such power of language, such insight into the human heart. But then when you showed me the opening pages of your novella, well, then...
You really think I have a chance, Mr. Marvin?
Well, I certainly do. An excellent chance, Jimmy. Of course, you've a long way to go. Professional writing isn't as easy as it looks from the schoolyard.
Oh, I know.
And a tough editor like Len Perkins will want to be shown. But if you stick with it, do as you're told.
I will, Mr. Marvin. Believe me, I will.
Now, art is one thing and craft is another. You remember that if you want to keep eating.
I will. You don't have to worry about me.
All right, Jimmy, that's all I ask. Give this all you've got. And who knows? Maybe you'll own the whole city in a year at that.
Our file on Howell Lewis Marvin up to 1951 shows two arrests with one conviction. It was while serving a term at Lewisburg for this conviction that Marvin's taste in literature bore criminal fruit. For it was here that he met another book-minded prisoner named Leonard F. Perkins. Perkins was a rough-and-tumble customer, in jail for sending obscene publications through the mail. On his and Marvin's joint release from Lewisburg, the pair turned their warped attention to what has become known as the sleaziest racket in the book.
Marvin Perkins Publications, good morning. Just a moment, I'll connect you. Yes, sir?
Hello, miss. I'd like a back copy of your magazine.
It's you, Mr. Marvin. I'm sorry I didn't see you.
Well, not at all. That's how we like the staff, right on the job. How are you, Miss Blair?
Just fine, thanks. Welcome back. How was the trip?
Oh, it was perfect. I almost signed up for the liberal arts. Anybody in yet, Mr. Perkins?
No, sir. He's due any minute. Miss Keegan is in his office having coffee.
Oh, coffee. Now, that's a good idea. Put all calls through to me in there, will you?
Of course, Mr. Marvin.
And tell Mr. Perkins that I want to see him as soon as he comes in.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Marv, is that you?
It's nobody else. Hello, Paula. How's the girl? Where's my kiss? What about coffee?
What first?
What else?
Well, thank you, sir.
Coffee?
Oh, you.
Black with two sugars. Ah, it's good to be back.
Miss me?
Yes, you and civilization. Oh, they can have their academic life, Paula. Give me good old ignorant New York. How is Len?
Oh, good as can be expected under the circumstances. Two sugars?
Mm-hmm. Circumstances?
Oh, you know. So what the devil's keeping Marv and that new character he wrote us?
Oh, that's the usual. Well, just wait until you see the new character, Paula. He is the most.
Here you are.
And this is black.
I can't stand coffee without anyway a little cream.
You can stand. Who's drinking this?
Oh, go on. It won't kill you. The most, huh? Where'd you dig him up? Harvard?
A place called Winfield U.
Never heard of it.
Who has heard of it? All that ivy and vine they got hiding the joint, almost missed it myself. Well, how's it been here?
Hot.
Business.
Not good, not bad. The blue blood alcoholic paid off for 5 G's, but our stage actor friend's acting up.
Huh?
Fact, he's been downright insulting. Called our illustrious magazine a filthy scandal sheet.
Oh.
Also called Len.
All right, never mind what he called me.
Len, there you are.
About time you got back, Marv. You won't need a vacation this year. Well, where's the character?
Oh, listen to him. Right away, business.
Where is he? Can he go out and do a feature story tonight?
Manners, Len. Don't you even say hello?
If not tonight, tomorrow morning at the very latest. Blair, honey, bring in that file and Joyce cameo, will you please? I said hello.
I must be getting deaf. I didn't hear it. Did you, Paul?
Must be getting deaf, too.
Okay, okay. Very funny. So hello, good morning, and where's the character?
Oh, sit down, Len. You'll get an ulcer.
I got an ulcer. Is he a gray suit job, Marv, from Madison Street?
He is, Len. Did I ever let you down? Jimmy is Ivy League from head to toe. Now relax, will you?
He can't relax. He's only got till tomorrow the latest.
Tomorrow morning. Now, this is big. Maybe the biggest. I don't want we should muff it.
Joyce Cameo?
Yeah, little Miss Hollywood. She's here in town for a personal.
Oh, I don't know, Len.
What do you mean you don't know?
Joyce Cameo is only a starlet. I mean, how much can she make?
How much can she make? Only a starlet, eh?
Well, isn't she?
Tell him, Paula. Brother, are you out of touch? Go on, Paula. Tell him.
She is only a starlet, like you say, Marv. But she comes from a Boston family that's, pardon the expression, but low dead.
Oh, one of those.
Eh? Yeah, one of those and then some. Loaded, unmarried, and a walkout on her old man who thinks acting stinks. Now add that up and tell me Gray Suit can't do a feature.
Well, I didn't figure on starting the boy so fast.
Well, what's fast? Get him over here, I'll give him the glad hand. Typewriter, his own office, the works. Paula gives him the private secretary routine, an advance expense account. What more does he need? He wants to work, don't he?
Well, I know, but
Len has something, Marv. The doll's here maybe only a week, 10 days.
Sure, and we gotta play this while it's hot.
Okay, okay, I'll get him over here. Have to learn the facts of life sometime. I guess we might as well begin.
Back to Scandal Sheet in just a moment.
What does the code of conduct mean to the American military man? It means more than just his being a good fighting man. It means the building of a soldier, sailor, marine, or airman's moral character. It means pride in his country and respect for its principles. It means a sense of honor and a sense of responsibility toward a way of life which has made America free. That's what the code means to the American military man.
Act two of tonight's story on the FBI in peace and war. Scandal Sheet.
For the first 2 years after their return to society, Len Perkins and H.L. Marvin stayed out of prison and ostensibly out of trouble. But in 1951, their undercover operation inadvertently came to light. An anonymous letter attached to a copy of a magazine was received at a California branch of the Better Business Bureau and subsequently forwarded to our local field office. Since we had no idea of the nature of the racket or even if there was one, our first step was to have the field office send on the magazine and letter to the bureau in Washington.
Steve, they're here. The magazine and letter. Oh, sorry.
Well, that's all right, Dave. I'm talking to Barney Felix in communications. Pull up a chair. I'll be right with you. Barney, Dave Reynolds just came in with the stuff California sent us. Bring up what you have in file on Marvin Perkins Publications, will you? Thanks, Barney. We'll be waiting. Okay, Dave. What's it look like?
Here you are. See for yourself.
Real intimate, huh?
The cover's mild. Where did you get a look inside?
Slick paper and everything. This isn't any cheap proposition.
It certainly isn't. Not according to that letter, anyway. Whoever wrote it claims he paid out $5,000.
To keep his intimate story out of the issue.
That's what he claims.
I can see why. The husband, Miss Galaxy, forgot. Now, there's a fine, upstanding title.
They get even worse. What's that one?
Is it true what they say about Dixie Southland? Who's Dixie Southland?
A top billing stripper in the fancier clubs.
Will success spoil George Spelvin? Okay, I've seen enough. Angle's blackmail, huh?
If you can prove it.
Not libel.
No, they're smart about that. Those titles are only a come-on and usually in the form of a non-libelous question. The stories themselves are old known facts with an occasional slanted innuendo that actually says nothing.
Slanted innuendo and slanted legal advice.
Well, not with this scandal sheet.
No?
You're looking at a rare item, Steve. That magazine has a very limited circulation. In fact, it never hits the stands.
It doesn't.
Strictly private clientele. Pretty low punching, isn't it?
Couldn't get any lower. And as you say, impossible to prove without cooperation.
That's why the BBB put it in our lap. They interviewed every big name mentioned in the thing and no dice.
No one ever heard of the magazine or its high-minded editors.
Exactly. That's why Perkins and Marvin let their names top the masthead. They know their victims can't afford to yell blackmail.
No one can afford it, Dave. That's how they get away with this tripe. You could slant a title question on anybody and make them look like Dr. Jekyll.
I know. And those stories surprise you, written with style.
Brett Alastair, Roy Madison. A lot of pseudonyms, probably. Oh, hello, Barney. Come in. You're just in time. We want to hear all you've got on Marvin Perkins Publications and everyone connected with it.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Miss Cameo?
Yes?
Joyce Cameo?
Well, that's right. Speaking.
Oh, Miss Cameo, this is Jim Wesley of Marvin Perkins Publications. I hope I'm not disturbing you at this hour. My editors asked me to call.
Yes, Mr. Wesley?
Well, we heard you were in town for a few days and want to do a feature story in one of our national magazines, Miss Cameo. I was wondering when you and I might get together for an interview.
And to show how any innocent party in the smart set can be involved in such chaos, the popular crooner and his married lady friend were embarrassed by none other than...
Marv.
Oh, yes, Paula.
He's here. He just came in.
Oh, Jimmy?
Yeah, he's waiting in the outer office.
Good, good. Miss Blair, you finished that up, huh? Embarrassed by none other than, some nondescript name.
Mr. Box Office?
That's perfect. Embarrassed by none other than Mr. Box Office himself. Has he got the finished story with him?
He has, right in his hot little hand.
Mm-hmm. Fine, we're all set to roll. Go in. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello, Mr. Marvin.
Oh, Miss Keegan tells me you've got that Joyce Cameo piece finished.
Yes, sir, here it is.
Now, let's take it right into Mr. Perkins. Any good?
Well...
Oh, come on, Mr. Wesley, no modesty among friends.
I think it's terrific. I mean...
That's all right, Jimmy, I'm glad you feel that way. If the author doesn't, why should our readers?
Of course, the subject matter didn't hurt. That Joyce Cameo is a real fine person.
Well, good. I hope that shows up in here. You coming, Miss Keegan?
Of course.
And, Jimmy, you take off the rest of the week. You got it coming.
You better wait till you've read that.
I'll take the gamble. I'll take the day off. As soon as this comes off the line of type, Miss Blair will send you a copy.
Well, thanks, Mr. Marvin.
Not a bit. My pleasure. After you, Miss Keegan.
Oh, thank you.
Len, I'm sorry to barge in on you when you're so busy, but young Jim West... Where is he?
The couch. Where else?
What's the matter, Rick? I can't take a stretch out once in a while. What's all the noise?
A Joyce Cameo feature, Len. You were the one who was bellyaching for action.
Oh, the kid wrote it, eh?
1,800 words. All we do is edit a little, put in the picture composite, and we're home.
All right, so relax. What's Paula so glum about?
Oh, I was just thinking that Jimmy's such a sweet kid, I hate to see him learn the facts so fast.
She hates to see him. You won't hate the cash when the Cameo doll forks over. My dough's on that.
I know. I was out of my mind.
For 10,000 fish, you'll only have love.
10,000?
Yeah, we're upping this one. It's too simple for five. Now go on, read me the feature and tell me I'm wrong.
Okay. Let's sit down, Paula.
Yeah, light someplace, will you? And listen. All right, Marv.
Well, he's called the piece Joyce Cameo at Bat.
On a bat, huh? Hey, that's not a bad angle for the title. How does that hit you, huh?
Len.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, go ahead.
You're Joyce Cameo, and you're having lunch with a feature writer. And you're the present toast of the town. Life is wonderful and before you. And something instinctive tells you that this is only the beginning. You're headed for the top. Nothing can stop you, nothing can hold you back. Your first important picture is in the middle.
Well, there's the magazine, Miss Cameo. You can see for yourself what it is. As Agent Reynolds said, there's no way of our proving you are in store for the same kind of blackmail. But when you were seen with this Jim Wesley...
What about him, Mr. Stevens?
We've been checking on that. His career parallels the other young men on the Marvin Perkins staff, at least so far as we can make out in the brief time we've had. They're grabbed up from small colleges on the promising offer of writing jobs.
I had no idea. Mr. Wesley led me to believe that... Well...
That your feature story would appear in something like Life or Cosmopolitan.
Yes, he did. When I think of how innocent he made himself seem...
I wouldn't judge too quickly, Miss Cameo. The boy could be on the level.
On the level and turn out this slide?
I say could. He may not be. Of course, we haven't been able to check far enough.
Have you talked to any of these people, this Dixie Southland or...
They won't help us, Miss Cameo. They'd rather duck the issue than face up to this kind of publicity.
That's why we've come to you. After the fact is too late. But if a prospective victim were willing to help us before the fact, we might be able to break this thing up.
Would you, Miss Cameo?
Huh?
Be willing to help us?
Oh, well, of course I would, only...
Yes?
I just don't see how they could think they could blackmail me. Oh, I don't pretend I'm a shining example of virtue, gentlemen, but... I can honestly say there's nothing in my past I'm ashamed of or would particularly want to hide.
We're sure there isn't. Nevertheless.
Nevertheless, even the simplest truth can be twisted to come out as heaven knows what.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the printed page with the victim not available to explain.
I'll help, gentlemen. I'll be glad to help.
It means taking something of a risk.
Oh, I'd be in for something more than a risk if you people hadn't dropped in on me.
It also means putting on an act.
Well, I'm an actress, aren't I?
You're more than that, Miss Cameo. We're very thankful.
What do you want me to do, Mr. Stevens?
This Jim Wesley, did he say anything about seeing you again?
No, I don't recall that he did.
Well, he'll be around, or his editors will.
When?
That's hard to say, but I'd count on soon.
We don't want you to do a thing, Miss Cameo. Just wait for them to play their hand. And this time, the play won't be quite so intimate.
Back to Scandal Sheet in just a moment.
Friends, this is Jimmy Wallington. You know, many great men have attained the highest office in our land, the presidency of the United States. Can you guess the name of this man? He was born in Vermont in 1830, and during the Civil War, he served as quartermaster general and as inspector general. While practicing law in New York City, he attracted attention as a champion of the rights of minority groups in that city. And in 1880, he was elected to the vice presidency under James A. Garfield. Only a few months later, he was suddenly called to the first position by the assassination of Garfield and took the oath of office on September 20th, 1881. His administration proved dignified and conservative and won him the respect of all classes. Well, you should have his name by now, but in case you don't, here's one more important clue. He gave his influence to the strengthening of naval forces during his term in office. When war came along 14 years later, our country was prepared. Yes, he was Chester Allen Arthur, 21st President of the United States. His life is part of your American heritage.
Of tonight's story on the FBI in Peace and War, Scandal Sheet.
Hello?
This is Marvin Perkins Publications calling. Is Miss Joyce Cameo there, please?
This is she speaking.
Our managing editor on the line, Miss Cameo. Just one moment, please.
Thank you. Mr. Stevens.
Yes?
This may be the call you've been expecting.
Good. Dave, the extension in the bedroom.
Hello, yes, hello, Miss Cameo. The proofs just came in on your feature layout. Mr. Perkins and I thought you might like an advance look.
Why, I would very much, Mr.
Marvin. H.L. Marvin.
It's very good of you to call, Mr. Marvin. Can I have someone come by and pick it up?
No, that won't be necessary, Miss Cameo. We can drop around with it personally.
Oh, but I couldn't put you to all that bother.
No bother at all. Mr. Perkins is anxious to have your reaction. Would say an hour from now be convenient?
Why, yes, that would be fun.
All right, we'll see you then. Jim Wesley has put his very best writing into your story, Miss Cameo. I think even you'll be surprised when you read it.
Surprised is hardly the word, Mr. Marvin. I'm shocked, really shocked.
I don't think I understand, Miss Cameo.
Don't you?
No, frankly, I don't. Mr. Perkins and I thought you'd be most pleased.
Pleased?
Didn't we, Len?
Uh-huh.
You mean to tell me you actually thought I'd go along with this gross misrepresentation of the facts?
No, just a minute, miss. There is no misrepresentation of anything in my magazine.
Oh, isn't there? I suppose these words put down out of context isn't misrepresentation in this picture.
Well, what about the picture?
But hold on now, Len. Let's not fly off the handle. Now, Miss Cameo.
I'm sorry, Mr. Marvin. I'm going to have to refuse permission for you to publish this. Why, if the public ever saw
refuse
this...
Refuse permission, eh? I like that.
Beg pardon?
I'm afraid you can't do that, Miss Cameo.
Do what?
Refuse permission. When you granted Jim Wesley an interview...
I granted him an interview for a decent article in a decent magazine.
Are you intimating that our magazine isn't decent?
I most certainly am.
Okay, Marv, I've had enough. Let's get out of here.
Yes, get out. Get out, the both of you.
I'm sorry, really I am.
Go away, Mr. Marvin, please.
I wish there was something we could do, Miss Cameo, but... You see, we've already gone to considerable expense.
Are you coming, Marv?
Well, 1 minute, then. You know, maybe there is something.
What?
What if that were met, Len? If we were reimbursed for our expenditure?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about something we could do. Now, if Miss Cameo doesn't want her story to appear and is willing to make up what we've already put out, we could go along with her, couldn't we?
Well,
we could, couldn't we?
Yes, I suppose so, but...
You expecting someone, Miss Cameo?
I don't know.
But I can't see anyone like this.
Would you like me to get rid of them?
Would you mind?
No, of course I wouldn't. You go in the bedroom. I'll tell whoever it is that you're not here.
Thanks. I just couldn't see anyone.
And don't you worry. I'm sure we're going to be able to work out something. You're right, Len. Too simple for five.
Yeah. $10,000 if we get a dollar.
Well, come on. Let's get rid of this pest. We're into the home stretch.
All right.
Jimmy.
Mr. Marvin, I want to talk to you.
Well, what?
Where's Joyce Cameo? Where is she?
Well, she's inside, Jimmy, but I...
What are you doing here, Wesley?
You'll find out what I'm doing. Miss Blair showed me a copy of my story. She said I'd find you two here.
She showed you a copy?
Of the story and your magazine. And suddenly a lot of things I was beginning to wonder about came very clear.
Oh, they did, huh? So what about it?
So this about it, Mr. Perkins. You're not printing that story.
Oh, he's not.
Not under my name or anyone else's.
Well, you're right about that, Buster. We're not printing the story. We never had any intention of printing it.
Len.
Oh, let him wise up. No punk college kid is going to tell me what I can or can't do.
You had no intention of printing it?
You got ears. You heard it.
You mean the magazine isn't for...
Isn't for what? Publication? You bet it isn't, Buster. It's nothing but a front for the neatest little racket in town, and you're in that racket, Buster, in deep with both feet.
Len, for the love of Mike.
Oh, what's the difference? You said he had to learn the facts of life sometimes, so let him learn. Now, you listen to me, Buster. If you know what's
hey, hold
good
it,
for
Len,
you...
Hold it.
Huh?
Hold it.
Hello, Mr. West.
Miss Cameo, I don't know what these men are up to, but whatever it is, don't listen to them. Don't do what they say.
Jimmy.
Don't, Miss Cameo. Don't do what they say. Don't listen to a word they tell
why,
you.
Why, you lousy little
Len,
punk.
Len. Now, Miss Cameo, if you'll excuse us for another moment,
No, I don't think I will, Mr. Marvin.
What?
I'd like to hear what Mr. Wesley is saying.
Yeah, well, I'd like you to get back in that bedroom until we...
I wouldn't if I were you, Perkins.
What, then?
I'd like you to stay where you are. I wouldn't touch the lady. I really wouldn't.
Say, what is this?
Miss Cameo...
It's all right, Mr. Wesley. Let Mr. Stevens handle it. And thank you for warning me as you did. I'm very glad about that.
Now, listen, you, whoever you are...
You heard the lady. His name's Stevens. Agent Stevens, Federal Bureau of Investigation.
What?
FBI?
That's right, Perkins. You and Marvin are under arrest.
Don't talk, Marv. Don't talk. They can't prove a thing.
Yes, I'll bet. Probably got the whole thing on tape. Isn't that right, Mr. Stevens?
Every single word since you walked in this room.
Mr. Marvin, I'm sorry. I didn't know
that... That's all right, kid. Forget it. Everybody gets lost up once in a while. Anyway, I owe you something for all this. Maybe an exclusive story of the racket will get you your first real sale.
Leonard F. Perkins and H.L. Marvin were brought to trial on the double charge of blackmail and the fraudulent practice of conniving to publish libel. Both were sentenced to the maximum penalty according to federal law. As a knowing and willing accomplice, Paula Keegan was also convicted and sent to women's prison for a 5-year term, thus removing from circulation 3 scandal mongers and 1 scandal sheet.
In tonight's story, Sharita Bauer played the part of Joyce Cameo. Walter Grise was Leonard Perkins. This radio dramatization for the FBI and Peace and War was written by Jack Anson Fink. These programs are produced and directed by Betty Mandeville. All names and characters used on the program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This program is based upon Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. And the broadcast does not imply endorsement, authorization, or approval for the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.